The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to the, not penultimate, but ultimate episode of the Babylon Project podcast, season 3. I am not joined tonight by my friends Jim Arrowood and J.P. Harvey. Instead, I am joined by my friends Jim Arrowood, J.P. Harvey, and special guest star, our illustrious editor, the guy that makes us sound good.
Oh, stop sucking up and get on with it.
How are you tonight, gentlemen?
I'm good.
I'm good, too.
Awesome. It's been a great day.
That was Troy, folks. Yep. Oh, golly. I'm doing good. I'm getting over that flu that's been floating around, so I'm a little brain punchy.
Ah. Yeah. Well, this is going to be an interesting evening.
Troy, I'm going to put you on the spot for a moment. Uh-oh. Tell us a little bit about yourself, because you've actually got some connection and history with Babylon 5. And I'm going to point our listeners after that. I'm going to point them to an interview that you did with Jim long before you became directly associated with the show.
Yeah, it was the first time I met Jim, I think, back at Ozfest a long time ago. So I'm Troy, do the editing here as of the second season, I think.
Yeah, partway through.
Yeah, part of the second season. But I used to be the webmaster of Babylon5.com and the AOL site at keyword Babylon5 on AOL. And more recently, I was one of the editors on the Babylon 5 encyclopedia that came out a couple months ago. I know a lot of people have been enjoying that. I did a lot of the multimedia type stuff and just general whatever they asked me to on that. I've been around for a while. I actually got the job with Warner Brothers back in 95 because of working on the Lurker's Guide before that. And I had a mailing list before that. So I've been there since the beginning.
Yep. And if you want to hear his whole story, folks, go back to the October 7, 2014 episode of this podcast. That's where he had mentioned an interview with Jim at Ozfest. That is where when the Troy Redder interview was published.
Jim, that's almost 4 years ago.
Oh man, yeah, I know. Time has gone by like crazy.
Well, on with the show, guys. Jim, I'm sorry, I kind of took some of your thunder in a way. I already called it the ultimate episode, but tell us what we're talking about tonight.
Okay, well, we're talking about the last episode of the third season called Zahadoom, and it's a barn burner of an episode, and you want to talk about boom? We got boom.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some boom today.
Yes, ta-ra-ra boom today.
So, how about giving us a summary? Let's get a setting point and we can get started.
Coming right up.
Archive. Access.
Initiated.
Sheridan's presumed dead wife, Anna, shows up on the station. Suspicious of whether she is really her or not, he takes her to med lab, where she is thoroughly examined, and then it is determined that she is actually Anna Sheridan, except that there is some strange scarring on the back of her neck. Anna invites Sheridan to accompany her to Zahadum, where she promises to tell Sheridan what the war is really about, and that they have technology that can advance humanity far into the future. Sheridan agrees to go and hear them out, even though he knows it's a trap. Sheridan and Anna head to Zahadum in the White Star, but what Anna doesn't know is that Sheridan has had Garibaldi load two high-yield nuclear weapons onto the ship. On Zahadum, Sheridan is introduced to someone named Justin, who along with Anna and Mr. Morden explain that both the Vorlons and the Shadows have the same goal, which is to advance humanity because of the potential they see. It is just that their methods are different. The Vorlons make rules and prohibitions, while the Shadows believe in the survival of the fittest through war would be the better way. Justin then invites Sheridan to join with the Shadows because Sheridan is a Nexus, and whatever decisions he makes will be followed by others. Sheridan tells them that he knows that Anna had implants and was part of a Shadow vessel, and that she may be Anna in the flesh, but Anna's personality is dead. Then he refuses to offer to join. When a Shadow creature enters the room, Sheridan pulls a concealed PPG and shoots the creature and manages to escape to a balcony overlooking an apparent bottomless chasm where he orders the White Star to arm the nuclear weapons and crash into the planet. Just as the ship is about to arrive, Anna appeals to him one last time, but the spirit of Kosh tells him to jump, which he does just before the White Star arrives and detonates the weapons, vaporizing Anna and the Shadow City. Jakar has secured several nuclear weapons and intends that they be used for the defense of the station. It is discovered that two are missing. The station is surrounded by Shadow vessels but are not attacking. Ivanova dispatches the Star Furies, including one piloted by Garibaldi. After Sheridan jumps into the chasm on Zahadum, the Shadows leave the station. When an account is taken, it is discovered that Garibaldi and his ship are missing. Londo is given the position of advisor to the Emperor Cartesia, knowing that it is a plot to rein him in. An associate of Morden warns Londo to get off the station as soon as possible. Well, there it is.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, though all I can say is...
Yeah, a lot going on. Quite a bit. A
lot going on. a whole lot going on. You know, when you talk about the bomb, I keep thinking for some... crazy reason, I keep thinking, bomb, do not blow up.
Yeah.
It didn't work, did it?
No, it didn't work. Okay, am I the only one here who's ever watched Dark Star?
I believe I've seen you it. May be. If I have seen it, it's been, I've long forgotten it.
Okay, let's just say I'm sure the guys were on an acid trip when they wrote it.
Ah, one of those kind of movies.
But, yeah, what was it? Was it Doolittle, I think? Was he the main guy?
I can't remember. Yeah.
That kind of went surfing into the sun on the piece of shrapnel.
Now I know I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah, that's the other thing I kind of think of when I see Sheridan going into the pit.
Ah, well, yep. Here we got pretty wow. Moving right along, we have a guest cast.
Moving right along. Yeah, you're gonna have to nudge us along here. This tells you how tired I am today.
Character files opened.
Guest cast.
Yes. We start out with Jeff Corey as Justin, the mysterious Justin. This is his first of two appearances on Babylon 5, but the second was uncredited. and was from archival footage, and will show in episode season 417.
Mm-hmm.
This is that guy, you know, when you're talking about someone you've seen many, many times, you go, oh, yeah, that guy. Okay, he's got credits back to 1938, and he's been in everything. Frankenstein meets the Wolfman in 1943, Superman and the Mole Men, 1951. He was on an episode of Outer Limits. Wild Wild West, he was on a couple of those. He was in Star Trek, the Cloudminders episode. He and Kirk went after each other.
Classic.
Yeah. Battle Beyond the Stars in 1980. The Spider-Man TV series with some voice work. Or no, not voice work. I'm sorry. I take that back. And he was also in two episodes of Little House on the Prairie. So he's no stranger to Melissa Gilbert.
Yeah. This is one of the great character actors in history. Like you said, his credits go back to the 30s.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and if it was something people were watching, you name it, he was on it. Bonanza, Gunsmoke, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he wasn't pigeonholed. He was in just about, I mean, he did science fiction. He did westerns.
Oh, yeah.
He did comedy. You name it, he did it. The guy is just a piece of history.
Yeah, seriously. Okay, and Ron Campbell as the messenger. This is his first of five appearances on Babylon 5. And Call to Arms, the Babylon 5 movie, and some Crusade.
Mm.
Yep. Ed Wasser returns as Mr. Morden, ninth of 13 episodes that he's on. And, you know, we all know and love Mr. Morden. And our special guest star again, this time, is Melissa Gilbert as Anna Sheridan, who was previously played by Beth Toussaint.
Aha.
Yeah, that's who it was, who also was Ishara Yar on Star Trek The Next Generation, Tasha Yar's sister. I just thought I'd throw that in for little information. Last of three appearances on Babylon 5. The first was an uncredited voice appearance, of course, where she introduces herself to Delenn and we don't see her, and Delenn drops that poor snow globe that mm-hmm. is terribly abused. And just a note here that this episode was directed by Adam Nimoy.
I thought that wasn't mm-hmm. the last one as well.
To be honest with you, I couldn't tell you right now.
Where is it? Actually, I can tell
he
you
seemed to show up in one of the other episodes, at least. I remember seeing his name.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. Shadow was Dancing was Kim Friedman.
Oh, the last episode. I thought you meant the last episode of the series. No, Adam Nimoy, he shows up all over the place.
Yeah, he was one of the popular directors for the show.
Yeah
we actually, back when we did the website, I actually made a little goof. They, you know, you mentioned that her voice was only in Shadow Dancing, and we came across this. We were always fighting with the unofficial websites about getting the latest news up there.
Uh-huh.
And unlike the fan sites, we could only use official photos. We couldn't just use whatever. So in my rush to promote this episode and be the first one, I published a photo of John Sheridan and Anna as Melissa Gilbert before the airing, causing much spoiler alerts to
some. I remember
you're
you telling
the one
me.
Who did that. Usenet blew up over that.
Well, everybody knew that she was on the show because she had a credit the week before. But yeah, I posted the picture a little early.
Oh no!
And yeah,
oh
chaos ensued. Yeah.
Seriously, and I know you already know this, Troy, but the Usenet, the Babylon 5, Alt-Rec Babylon 5 blew up over that. In a positive way, but it was.
It was an innocent picture. It was just them standing together. I was like, there's nothing spoiler about it, but yeah, that was one of my more brilliant moments, I guess.
How much grief did you get for that?
Well, you could always not read the message boards, so. I apologize. to all those people from 25 years ago.
Oh, God.
25-year-old spoilers. Gosh darn it.
That's it. I quit.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Initiating plot analysis.
Okay.
Yeah.
This episode literally picks up right where we left off last week. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. It's like we get a rehash in the reset. We get a rehash of that scene from season two that had Beth in it.
Mm-hmm.
Except they redid the scene this time with Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, that poor snow globe. That's the third time it gets smashed on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
Rosebud.
Touche.
There's a couple things that that always bothered me about this scene, and one was how she just entered the room. Like, here's the leader of the finding the shadows, and someone could just walk in with the door wide open, basically. So I always thought, you know, did a shadow help her open the door, or what was going on there? How did she just walk in?
Did Sheridan have a comment? Did he always use the same pin for a manual entry? Or
I guess it could be their wedding day or something, you know, to punch into the keypad.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I hadn't thought of that.
But the other one was, you know, I think last episode you guys talked about how maybe it was a couple episodes about, you know, Susan being out of character when she was distraught during War Without End.
Right.
You saw her, you know, all frantic. And this one, I thought it was Delenn starting off, you know, just in the first few minutes, because here comes Anna Sheridan, who everybody thought was dead, or, you know, those who wouldn't serve were killed. And she's just like, oh, Anna's here. I'm going to leave. Like, she is in Tilza, head of the Rangers, and a shadow agent comes in the door that's unlocked and wants to talk to Sheridan, and she just bails out of there.
She runs like a scared schoolgirl.
Yeah, and I thought that was very uncharacteristic of the leader of the council, the Rangers, you know, everything. Yeah. And
Ms. Be somewhere else.
Right? Yeah. I just thought that was uncharacteristic, but it doesn't spoil the episode. I think it's one of the best episodes they've done. But that just always kind of like, oh, she just leaves. She's like, see ya.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go get some sleep since I've been watching you sleep. So she takes off.
Well, how about imagine yourself as a first-time viewer, and when Anna Sheridan shows up, you are somewhat in shock, and you really don't notice when something like that, you know, we just need to get Delenn out of the way so we can see what's going to happen next. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that was just the first couple minutes. The rest of the episode goes better.
Oh, and Sheridan's opening line, what are you doing here? It's like, okay, great opening, dude. Great opening.
Yeah.
Not how is this possible or can this be true? What are you doing here?
What are you doing here?
Well, imagine what would you say? I mean, you find out your wife is, beyond a shadow of your doubt, dead.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you guys. Anyway, you know, what are you going to say? You know,
mm-hmm.
this is a heck of a shocking moment for this poor guy.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I would think something more of a, oh my God, you're alive?
No, I would definitely say, what the hell are you doing here? Because he's already got Delenn lined up. See, I mean, come on.
Yeah. But the way he says it, it sounds like the next line should be, it's not what you think.
Yeah. Yet.
We're just friends.
Yeah.
Oh, God. But, yeah, like Troy says, Delenn runs out like a scared schoolgirl.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation that follows, her just apologies and carrying on, I don't know. For me, it seemed like she was almost overdoing it a bit, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
And not a reflection of the writing or the or the acting or anything, because it was clearly by intent.
Yeah.
I thought it was strange. She walks in with almost a disgusted look on her face.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like you were saying, Troy, would generate a response like, oh, this isn't what it appears to be, or what have you. I mean, she doesn't show up looking like the woman who has found her husband after 5 years.
Right.
She walks in like, okay, I'm here to take care of this business. And in fact, it quickly goes there. Right.
Well, oh, yeah.
Well, all you have to do.
Yeah.
So there's his shock, for whatever we think of it, is because he's looking at his dead wife. She walks in not joyful to see her husband. She walks in like, well, look, here's what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
She starts right in with the hard sell.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I thought was strange, and I suspect that it was nothing but just the way she acted the scene, was that toward the beginning of that scene when she begins to engage him, and then just a minute or so later as that continues, she puts her hand on her stomach almost like she doesn't feel good.
Mm.
And it nothing comes of that, so I said I don't think that was something that she was supposed to do. But I went back even and watched it again the other night, went back to that scene because I thought, why is she putting her hand on her stomach? And she did it once, and then the scene continues a bit, and then she does it again. And it was almost as if she was in pain. It was, you know, I just point that out because I guess it distracted me enough that I had to stop the episode and back up and look at what is she doing? But, it was kind of a creepy scene overall with her coldness, you know, she was icy.
Do you think perhaps, and I don't know, this may be a real stretch, that she wasn't detecting that little bit of Kosh that exists within Ooh. Sheridan?
That's an interesting thought.
Mm.
Yeah. That, yeah, because we're I mentioned it now, when she's on the White Star, she's a little, there's some physical discomfort with her around Vorlon.
Yeah,
anything Vorlon. So yeah, but as far as that hard sell is concerned, yeah, it ends up with all you have to do is come with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and all,
you know, it's
all
like,
the alarms.
Warning, we're Robinson.
Ringing. Yeah, danger.
Yeah, and she got real sweet at that point. Come with me to Zahadum.
Well, we come back from one heck of an opening here to Jakar having some boom for Susan and. A lot of boom that is, too. What was it? Each of those were 500 megaton nuclear devices.
That'll move some Earth.
That's definitely.
It's a good thing Jakar didn't have those before, or he would have leveled Centauri Prime with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he got these from the GAM,
yeah, I
think he said. Yeah, because they weren't Narn. So I guess this is, we keep talking about Chekhov. This is Chekhov's nuclear bombs.
Nuclear bombs. Oh, the
nuclear,
other Chekhov.
Nuclear
the
bombs.
The other Chekhov.
Nuclear.
Oh, okay. nuclear vessels?
From the vessels, yeah.
Yeah. In Alameda.
Just kind of fit there.
Apologies to you, Walter, if you listen to this. We do love you.
Absolutely. Oh, gosh. Well, we do find out it is Anna, at least according to Franklin. There's some weird scars on her neck, but according to everything that they have, it is Anna. So we get that established very quickly.
Franklin is still using his cane, carrying that continuity from the last episode, his near-death experience there.
Yeah, he wouldn't be up and around very long. So
the show is actually pretty good with that kind of continuity.
Yep.
I think now I'm sure others have done it, but I think the first show to really reach that level of consistency that I'm familiar with would have been Fringe like a decade later, which was one of my favorites. But John is a little, I guess the Babylon 5 word is honked off with Delenn.
Cranky?
Yeah.
Cranky. Positively cranky. I'd go so far as, you know, he's probably being a bit harsh with her. I mean, she really had good reason to believe she was dead, right?
Well, everybody did. And in my mind, he is just looking her right in the eye and accusing her and Kosh in absentia of lying to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as far as I am concerned, he is being really unfair.
I agree. I absolutely agree. At least up to a point.
Now in JMS's commentary, which I watched this evening before we started recording, he pretty well kind of describes it as nothing really more than a lover's spat. Really, they're just having an argument that would be normal for any couple. So
normal for any couple? Yeah, we're spending our first night together and the dead wife shows up.
And nothing's even happened.
I took the scene as him just being in shock. You know, first he's shocked and he's, what are you doing here? And now he's mad. Is this my wife? What do I do? I'm in love with this other woman. How do I fix this? And as he explains, he was still in love with her. Some piece of it, you know, some piece of him was still in love with her and he had to push that down. And now here she is standing there. Delenn may or may not have known that she was alive, or he's just mad. And he's mad at Delenn because that's who he can be mad at.
Yeah.
Which is sad because he does come across like a bully.
Yeah. When it comes down to if they did know she was alive, would they have lied to him? And Delenn's sort of equivocating, well, we don't know, it would depend. He's got some justification for being angry there.
Yeah, that hurt. But she was honest.
Yeah.
But she was honest.
She didn't lie to cover a potential lie, right? She, no. Because you know what?
Well, she's Mambari. Right. Mambari can't lie. They don't lie.
Unless to save face for another. Now here, one thing that I wonder about is if Delenn wasn't as much in shock as John was, because she didn't even try to fight back. She just stood there and let him rant at her for 2 minutes or whatever it was, and all she did was try to apologize and say, I didn't know anything. Come on.
And just sit there and look utterly miserable. Yeah. So, yeah, you feel for her. Because the one thing that's clear is she is completely and totally in love with John Sheridan.
I think in this day and age, regardless of that, if it were shot today, I think she would tell him to go straight to hell.
Which would be a shame, because the characters, what he did with the characters, is as much part of what makes it so great as what he did with the story. Yeah.
Well, and then Sheridan could have come back with, I'm on my way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ah, Londo. He is, speaking of miserable, busy drinking himself to oblivion.
And why?
So what's new?
Well, right now, because he's so terribly upset, he got a promotion.
You've been this way since the diplomatic pouch arrived. What's going on? I got promoted.
Yeah. Well,
except in this case, it's sort of the keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer.
Yeah. How would you feel if you were being called home to serve Cartasia?
Yeah. And, well, here's one area where Wolando is completely dead wrong. They would not have found him in the morning with his throat slit. His head would just be completely gone.
Yeah, sitting on a desk somewhere.
Right, as one of his Cartasia's closest advisors. Yeah.
Of course, we haven't gotten that far yet. We haven't met Cartasia yet, so we're in for a real treat there.
Oh, that is, of the sub-arcs, that is absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. But near comatose, Londo and Veer are interrupted by one of Morden's people warning him to get off the station ASAP.
I wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
Making a great day even better.
And then we have another guy like Morden on board.
Right.
How many are there?
Lapses in security, as I recall.
Again.
Also might explain how Melissa walked into Sheridan's room.
Could very well.
Lapses in security.
Do we have shadow agents from the Icarus? Do we have them embedded with security too? Or, you know, who knows how many of these guys are running around?
Or even not from the Icarus. Remember, the shadows do have other agents. That,
yeah, that's right.
You know, like on Earth. And
They're jerks. I like Londo's response, though. You know, what if I don't want to leave, or what if I'm comfortable where I am?
Yeah.
And the messenger walks away. Okay. You know?
Your choice. Yep. It's sort of Morden's version of you want to live, be somewhere else, basically.
Mm-hmm. That was nice. Fair warning, right? Because Londo had said back several episodes in his anger, you know, he reappealed to Morden to help him and said, he went from almost not plummeting down a dark hole to going totally in after his bride was killed. And so it's fair. Morden would say, get off the station.
It's almost a surprise that Morden even bothered to warn him.
Yeah, he could be useful later. Doesn't hurt to warn him. I think Morden would use him as a pawn, so it's...
Yeah.
Could either dispose of him, or you can keep him around because he might be helpful later.
Well, moving the story on, we do find some scar. That's those scars that Franklin was worried about.
Yeah.
He's investigated them, and it turns out that they are an exact match for the scars that were on Bester's lover's neck where the shadow interfaces were located.
Caroline Sanderson.
Right.
And we know this because it was really cartoony how they did it. It was... oh my gosh. It was the...
Superimposing the two images.
Disappointment's too strong of a term, but it went... I just thought, really?
Hey, this was mid-90s.
All the cool graphics and the ships, and then we get the blinking dots like, look here. Oh, and then the two... It was just like, stop, really? There wasn't another way to do this? But then I got over it.
If it had been today, there would have been like a pinch and zoom where you pinch it, and it was before the iPads, though. So.
Yep.
I don't know how they could have done it better then, but it just seemed kind of funny to me. But it made the point. So
in looking at it at today's tech.
Boop, 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 boop.
All right. So why is Anna so anxious to get Sheridan to Zaha Doom? Why is he so important?
Well, we're going
to
find out.
You know, it's like, why didn't they just cut the station in half a long time ago? Why go to so much trouble to send her? Obviously, sounds like she was prepped to be part of the central operating system of a shadow vessel. So it's obvious that it was because of him that she wasn't.
Yeah.
So
we're gonna find out for sure later.
Uh-huh.
But
I think
what's going on is we know that Sheridan is leading a movement against Earth.
Uh-huh.
He is leading a movement against the shadows. He has access to the Great Machine on Epsilon 3. You know, people are flocking to him. He's a very important person. And if the shadows can turn him, then all this unpleasantness will be avoided.
Or controllable, at least.
That, yeah. Mm. I think they're actually hoping to turn him.
I think you might probably be right there. She is definitely obsessed with the shadows. Though she does kind of mock the name as being a little bit melodramatic. Mm-hmm. Though she admits that their name's 10,000 letters long.
And unpronounceable, because I've tried. Right.
And unpronounceable. Right. But her story, you know, it matches her IPX, story about IPX interplanetary expeditions. It matches what he knows from the Mars story from Mike and from Marcus, and matches up with what he's been told from Dylan and Kosh.
Mm.
except that she's claiming that the rest of the crew was killed in a, air quotes, accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the way she says they, sometimes it kind of almost makes me wonder, is like, okay, was it just Morden and her that are there? Yeah. Or are there some more?
Yeah. Well, we know that's baloney. The shadows have been killing thousands and thousands of people. And I think Sheridan right. has more brains than to just accept what Anna is saying. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he didn't, how in the blue hell did he get in the position he's in?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Though she's really trying to hammer home the Caution Delenn misleading him yeah. part. Which, okay, well, perhaps, but...
And by the way, say not to do anything more than just revisit the opening scene where she comes into his room and Delenn storms out, and what does she say? Oh, she didn't tell you?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. nice. Nice setup right there.
Well, and you know, as we said before, Anna is on the hard sell, and yep. she's going to say anything she yep. can think of, or that she's either that or been scripted to say, to discredit anything that will make John think that he should be anywhere except with her.
And she's on that hard sell to the last moments, her last moments on mm-hmm. the episode.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That never stops.
Uh-huh. But, and you know, and the for me, this was a real clincher. It's like, okay, this is an Anna. He decides he's going to go.
Yeah.
And if that really was Anna and she really knew him, his deciding to go should be something that would be more of a worry than anything yeah. else.
Well, she's not Anna. She's not acting right. like his wife at all. As nope. Troy pointed out earlier, she just walks on the station and she starts, you know, oh, you got to come to Zaha Doom. Come on to Zaha Doom. We got cookies. Come to Zaha Doom, you know, and all this other stuff. she has absolutely nothing to say to him about missing him or what happened all these years or, mm-hmm. you know, what have you been doing? There's no small talk or going and jumping into the bed or any of that kind of stuff you would expect.
Nope.
And she's, you know. It's definitely not her.
Now, I was going to say, in almost every other show where something like this happens, you get the almost stereotypical, like, okay, ask me something that only we would know. You know, he doesn't even try, hey, what's my favorite color, to try to test her memory or anything. So mm-hmm. you never know how much memory she really retained. But
mm-hmm.
do we get a sense of that with Morden? Like, does he know everything of his past or... completely reprogrammed, so to speak.
I know that he knows he was on that research ship and what his
from the
what
data.
His job was, yeah. but how he knows that.
Yeah.
I get the feeling, remember the way Delenn had put it, those who wouldn't serve were killed. I think Morden has his full past, full history. I don't think he was ever plugged into a shadow vessel. He was gung-ho, okay, here's my chance. Mm. I get the feeling that he was slimy from the outset. Yeah. Well.
But he, yeah, he decided.
He's going to go.
He's going to go. Let's go. Pack up the White Star and let's go.
Did you see the look on his face? He's hugging her. And looking over her head at the report on their pads, their tablets, and he is just shy of full-blown rage. He is
It was
mad.
Cool. As he went to embrace her, though, he looked like he had genuinely accepted what she said. And as soon as his head gets past hers, he changes and does that glance and is like, wow.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. So he's definitely got something up his sleeve here. In fact, we come back from that to Sheridan talking to Mike, and he's got some work for Mike.
Yeah, a few things to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Gives him a nice little list, and it from Mike's reaction, I don't think that list is much to do with lunch or for the meeting that afternoon or laundry or even the weather.
No.
So, okay, you've got the clip of that discussion. Let's go ahead and play it.
All right, I guess we can do that. Anything else?
Yes. While you're at it, I need a few things taken care of. It's all here. You will, of course, keep this confidential.
These days, what around here isn't confidential? I'll take care of... Son of a bitch.
It's against regulations to address a senior officer in those terms, Mr. Garibaldi. Michael. When I first came here, I wasn't sure about you. You weren't sure about me. Since then, I have come to trust you, to rely on you. Now, I need you to take care of this for me. No questions, no speculations, no hunches, or educated guesses. All right. Good. And when I see you next, if everything is said, we'll talk about the weather.
Yes, sir.
So what the heck is Mike asked, or has he asked Mike to do?
Good question. I have a feeling we're going to at least find out what part
Mike,
of it is.
Mike
here.
Turned white as a sheet. It's like, hey.
Mike is freaked. The music is ominous, and Sheridan is sounding like he's planning a Sunday picnic.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the weather.
Mm-hmm. And Sheridan's packing up for his trip. Not one, but two PPGs. One for an ankle holster.
Yeah. Probably wise.
Yeah. And we hear from someone who's gone.
You go to Zahadu. William Dow.
Yep. We've heard that a time or two.
Yep. Now, was that a flashback? Or was that something else?
Oh, there's some speculation there.
Speculate away.
Well, see, we know the answers, so that's no fun. I think we'll speculate later.
Okie doke. Anyway, Mike seems to have come through. He doesn't seem very happy about it.
Not at all.
And they're just discussing it on the sly right in front of Anna.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. She's sitting there. She's looking at back and forth. It's like, the look on her face is like, I know something is going on here, but I can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, was Anna there alone, or did they send the shadow with her?
No, it was just her and Sheridan, at least that we could see.
Right. We never saw anything, and we never heard the noise. The little shadowy,
squeakies. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if we're going to ride in a white star, a shadow wouldn't be very comfortable in there.
Yeah, and this goes back to this actually perfect segue, because Anna can sense Vorlon technology, it seems almost. And as we noted earlier, it's almost like it causes her physical discomfort.
Yeah, see, and that harkens back to what JP was saying.
When I talked about her discomfort when she entered his cabin, had nothing to do with Vorlon tech then, but she appeared to be in distress, like not because a line spoken, but because twice she puts her hand awkwardly on her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
But Sheridan is toting around a Vorlon.
Right. It's not technology. It's him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A Vorlon technology is alive.
Right. Yeah. Better said. Yep.
I meant to say something earlier too with Mike and, Mike and Sheridan, that seemed like a very final moment there.
Yeah, like we could talk about the weather. We know that's not going to happen, you know.
Yeah, well, as Sheridan and Anna are getting on a ship, that was a goodbye.
Yeah.
Sheridan did not expect to be coming back.
Right.
Yep. And you get the feeling, because Susan and Franklin are both sort of missing on Sheridan and talking about it, and Franklin's a little surprised about Sheridan leaving, and brings up the report that he gave to Sheridan about Anna. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's like, what's going on? Doesn't he know? He knows there's something wrong with
her.
Yeah,
there's a problem with Anna. Duh, you think?
Mm-hmm. Franklin's confused because Sheridan goes with her, and then Susan is confused because she didn't know there was a problem at all, other than it was awkward.
Well, the first problem with Anna is that she's there. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. Yeah, and you notice Susan was pretty much kept in the dark about everything going on here. I mean, she obviously knew Anna had shown up, but as far as what is actually happening, she's out of the loop.
Which is really atypical of Susan. Forget, was it last season or early this season? She has an exchange with somebody and about knowing things, and she said, it's my job, right? Or something like that, to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she, basically it's when she doesn't know what's going on that you better be worried.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time that she doesn't know what's going on, so I wonder if you really should be worried. So, Zahadoom. Right.
Zahadoom.
Next up.
Corrugated steel.
That was a big... They were running a big special at Lowe's that
That's
week.
That's right.
Oh, my.
You know, this is one of the... This is one of the areas where high-def 50-inch plasma can be a bit of a letdown. It doesn't stick out quite as much on a 27-inch standard def. When you put it on a good flat panel, little things like that, unfortunately, do kind of stick out.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like what it is. Well, I assume that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You make do. You dress the set with what you need to dress the set with.
Hey, look at it this way. At least I didn't get the steel at IKEA like all the rest of the furniture.
There you go.
I do have to say, this was another... There was a distraction in this scene for me, too, not as much as the last one I called out. When they're coming off the shuttle, did you guys notice the front wheel?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like embedded in a rock or something. It doesn't look right. It doesn't look right at all.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because in the commentary, JMS was very proud of that.
Oh, he was? Yeah.
He was. He was very proud of how that wheel, where it was... gave the scene a lot of perspective about the size of the shuttle itself as compared to the people. So,
yeah, that's true. It just looked like the wheel must have dissolved the rock as the ship landed, and it sank right into the rock.
Or it was just the way it was angled, pushed up against it. Or
yeah,
but it definitely gave a perspective when you're looking at that wheel in the foreground. You appreciate how big things are.
Yeah.
Right.
So what is the atmosphere on that planet? It you know, they seem to need that breathing equipment. They must have borrowed them from Kosh's quarters.
No oxygen, but at least it's not caustic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So apparently the pressure is okay and everything else, so I guess.
But the shadows live underground.
I recall, though, when they show the Icarus on the planet previously, people were walking around in spacesuits.
They were in pressure suits. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that could just be protocol for first contact, on a new planet.
Could very well be. And they had to give those 2001 outfits back, probably, so they could.
Right. But they live under the shadows. Live underground.
Well, as the people do too, apparently.
Yeah, and as we'll find out at the end, apparently. It's the shadows seem to use a more normal human atmosphere themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When we see that when Sheridan makes it out to the main city. And I love it. They come into the underground, custom quarters. And she takes his gun.
Uh-huh.
Why is it in all it's a trope. They never look for a backup.
Well, all right, again, to the commentary, JMS said that it would be expected that the shadows would have technology that would detect the weapon. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the one he was wearing on his hip was charged. However, the one he had rat-holed in the holster on his ankle was not on. It wasn't charged. It wasn't on. So it would not have been detected.
Hmm. Okay. And I guess no metal detectors are just not well, there.
Well, you've got a corrugated steel wall. What are you going to detect?
Yeah.
Oh, look, a wall. I just detected a wall. Now, well.
When was the last time you had to go through a TSA checkpoint?
Yeah, but you got to stand still and raise your hands over your head, too.
Yeah.
But I want to refer back to the hidden PPG when we get to that spot.
Okay. Well, we'll be getting there soon because, well, who is this old goot? Though I think Sheridan asks it in an even worse way. Who are you? Wrong question for the shadows.
No, they don't like that one.
Nope. In fact, you've got his answer, I think. Let's play his answer. Actually, question and answer, I guess.
It helps me sleep better. Captain, I think you already know.
Yes. Hello, Captain.
Have a seat, please.
Who are you?
Now, that's really not important.
Who are you?
Who decides that the workday is from 9 to 5 instead of 11 to 4? Who decides that the hemlines will be below the knee this year and short again next year? Who draws up the borders, controls the currency, handles all of the decisions that happen transparently around us?
I don't know.
Ah. I'm with them. Same group, different department. Think of me as a sort of middleman. And the name is Justin. Come in, sit. The tea's getting cold.
The man in the middle. Mm-hmm.
Did he understand the question, do you think? Well, and why I'm asking is interesting question to be asked to begin with the way it was asked. And it sounded very Vorlon-y to me. And I wondered if that was Kosh challenging them through Sheridan. Who are you?
Yeah, but you didn't have all that distortion that comes with Kosh's voice.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the first time he asked it was very, very just generic. Give me a name or something. But the second time he asked
it. Hi, I'm John. Who are you?
Then, yeah, he almost sounds like a Vorlon.
Who are you? What? That's a strange. There was something about that scene. And I don't, you know, that'd be another, I guess, good for JMS question or something. But that was that was a forceful question. It wasn't just a, okay, you know who I am because you sent someone out to get me. Who are you?
Yeah. Well, JMS said on the commentary, and I know I'm referring to that an awful lot, he said the shadows and the Vorlons are very interesting in that the Vorlons know who they are, but they don't know what they want. And the shadows know what they want, but they don't know who they are.
Interesting. Yeah.
Really interesting. You know, it kind of makes me wonder what would the answer have been if Sheridan asked as a follow-up.
What do you
question,
want? What do you want? Yeah. What do you want from me, or what do you want? And mm-hmm. and he's going to get that anyway without asking. Because and Jim, based on what you just said, if that's their point of reference is what they want, that's all they can do is let that spill out.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
All right. We hop back to the station for a moment, and, you know, Garibaldi knows what's going on. Let's face it, he said no speculations, but there's no speculation needed. And he leaves a message for DeLynn.
Mm-hmm.
she really doesn't like that, the news that he has for her.
No, absolutely not. However, we now know that Sheridan isn't stupid because he knows, he's known all along what the heck's going on here.
Right. So he knows.
It's a trap.
So what in the world is his plan? And JP, you look, it sounded like you were about to toss something
in. It looks like he did a good job at mending her broken heart just to break it a different way, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that message, which starts with an amazing smile on his face, and then he gets serious, and he tells her he loves her, which should right. remove any worry or doubt that she had about his anger before. Yeah. And I've gone to Zahadum. And you warned me not to go there because I'll die. But.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you can, you know.
Yeah. By the way, by the time you read this, I'll be on Zahadum.
We all know I'm not coming back.
Have a nice day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
But we do shift back to Zahadum, and we get, actually, it's a good, it's actually sort of an honest presentation of their perspective. And this kind of goes along with what Jim's saying. They really wanted to win him mm-hmm. over. They're looking at it, I mean, kind of sets it up as the Lords of Order versus the Lords of Chaos. And the Shadow's objective is, you know, to help give evolution a bit of a nudge now and then.
Right. Interesting worldview. Or universe view. Or...
Mm-hmm.
But why? What was the point of giving the nudge? Why Sheridan, I guess, is really the... Isn't this where we get the answer?
In a bit, actually.
It gets explained.
Yeah.
Yep. But right before that, we get... Well, let's just say that is a lot of shadows at Babylon 5. But where the heck are all the guard ships?
Yeah. That are there in all the other scenes?
Well, if you look closely, you'll see that they're like really, really close to the station.
Yeah.
Like one was like right on top of it. And I think that this actually came up way back in the day and with the Lurker's Guide, or actually it was on a news group, but the Lurker's Guide makes mention of it. Yeah, it's just the shadows phased in just way too close, so there was no there's no way to really scramble the ships or anything, and apparently they don't have patrols. I don't know. I guess if I was out in the middle of nowhere with the Earth looking at you, I might have a couple ships out there, but yeah. If they were to fire on the station, you know, at the shadows, chances of hitting the station would have been a little great.
Certain.
Yeah. So, yeah, Joe actually mentions that on the Lurker's Guide, and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's JP's ever-present reason.
It's in the script.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Why did they do that? It's in the script.
You know, we almost need to make a clip of that just so we can have it, you know, loaded up on a cart and tap
I don't wish that on the listeners.
But back to what JP was originally talking about before the ships came in, Morden is really trying to sell the idea as well. I mean, they're doing a full pitch, and it's not necessarily a hard sell, as in do it or else, but they're really trying to sell him on the idea of what they're doing, and almost making it sound like a just or a noble cause.
Yeah. Even. Well, see, and even before that, they finally came down and did make a threat. You know, you either play ball with us, but, and we're not going to kill you, but we will remove your support system.
Yeah.
Yep. You've got that conversation, right?
I do.
Let's go ahead and play it, because that's the whole last two seasons from the Shadow's perspective.
Back a million years ago, there were forces prowling around the galaxy beyond anything that we could understand. And, like anything else, most of them outgrew this little corner of the universe and headed off toward greener pastures. Now, two of them stayed behind, shepherds you might call them. They wanted to look after the younger races, bring them around, help them evolve into something better.
One of these was the Vorlons. The other was what you call the Shadows.
The Vorlons are like your parents, I suppose. They want you to play nice, clean your room, do it by the rules. I guess you could call them Lords of Order.
The others, the ones who live here, believe that strength only comes from conflict. They want to release our potential, not bottle it up.
It's really simple. You bring two sides together, they fight. A lot of them die. But those who survive are stronger, smarter, and better.
It's like knocking over an anthill. Every new generation gets stronger. The anthill gets redesigned, made better.
So that's what the Shadows do. Come out every few thousand years and kick over all the anthills, start wars, destroy entire races.
A few get lost along the way. Yes, and that's unfortunate. I don't think it was ever easy, but you can't let that get in the way of the dream.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They know what they want.
They're just trying to help.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nice people. Go ahead and fight each other, and then the strong will survive, and,
we'll make it
Hitler,
easier for
1938.
You. I was going to say Nietzsche.
Yeah.
I mean, their philosophy is Nietzsche in a nutshell.
Sounds kind of like it.
Ooh, that'd be a great blog. All right. Anyway, yeah. So why is John standing in their way?
I don't know. We do have Morden's explanation of the Vorlons yet.
Oh, yep. Keep going then.
Development of younger races.
When you look at a Vorlon, you see what they want you to see. They've manipulated us so we'd respond favorably to them. They've even interfered at a genetic level, taking humans and adjusting them. Why do you think certifiable telepaths came out of nowhere 100 years ago?
They created telepaths on 100 worlds to use as cannon fodder for the next war. But fortunately, our friends got there first and with the help of the Psi Corps, made sure that they came out on our side. John, they think that the human race shows great potential. When all this is over, we can be riding high. The first to rebuild, making things our own way. But the only thing that's standing in our way now is you. So we can either work together now, or we can remove your support mechanism.
Yeah. And see, it's so funny what Morden's trying to sell, because we have seen what the Shadows are doing. Okay, the Vorlons are very bad because they won't let you see their real self, and they're terrible, and you got to watch out for them. And what the hell have the Shadows been doing all this time?
Killing stuff.
You know, yeah. They've been behind the scenes manipulating everything. They have their fingers in EarthGov's pie. They've got Londo, you know, the Centauri hiding them on their planet. We've got all this stuff going on. And here's Morden trying to convince somebody that it's because the Vorlons are terrible people.
But how much truth is there in what Morden is saying here? Let's face it. The Vorlons have no hesitation about killing younger races singly or en masse when it suits them. Go all the way back. I mean, they were ready to cut the station to shreds when Kosh got hurt in the pilot. They blew up Deathstalker with her knowledge just because they didn't think the younger races were ready. Kosh was not prepared to have someone disobey him and almost lost it on Sheridan. He's got to, you know, the way they just dip their fingers in and manipulate entire races just for their own benefit. So he's got a, and I'm not saying that the shadows are good here.
Oh, you shadow sympathizer, you.
The Vorlons aren't quite the good guys that we want to think they are either, it seems. At least if Morden's actually correct in everything he's saying.
Well,
yeah, we kind of got that, the little first inkling of that when, you know, Olkesh came on the station. So the Vorlons aren't all innocent.
Right, exactly. It's almost like Kosh is an exception for even the Vorlons in some ways.
You know what I wanted Sheridan to ask? But it would have fueled a huge tangent that just wouldn't fit the story. I wanted him to say, after the explanation of the anthills and the evolution and all that, is, so did you fuel the human-Minbari war?
Hmm.
Did you cause these two to clash to better somebody, you know, whoever, both, or... Yeah, he said that would...
Well, if they did, if they did, Sheridan kind of nip that in the bud, too, back in the day.
And it may further explain why he is so appealing as the lowly commander of a Babylon station.
But that was still 10 years before IPX, at least 10 years before IPX kind of woke them up. Though from what we understand, that they were kind of beginning to move about already. So, you know, the visit to Mars, things like that. So it's a valid theory.
But it brings us to this issue of why Sheridan and why is he in their way? Why don't they trample him? Just get rid of him. But the answer comes here, right?
Well, the answer comes right on just a little bit further. Basically, he's been able to pull order out of the chaos the shadows are trying to create. And with what he's done, killing him would simply make him a martyr. So it's dealing with the devil you know versus the devil you don't.
Yeah, that's true. However, there's something to be said. If you're going to kill a snake, you're going to cut off its head. You're not going to cut off its tail. So.
But is this more of a snake or a hydra in this case?
Well, you know, with Sheridan representing, as far from the shadow point of view, he's the snake. You know, but
but you know, so that's why, and the fact that he is such a nexus, that's why they want to really win him over as well. And this is where Sheridan comes sort of clean. He points out, yes, like when Justin makes his threats, it's sort of, what you're going to do to me what you did to Anna, makes it clear. Yes. Like, yeah. The body might be alive. Yeah. But the person,
she flew a shadow ship, for crying out loud.
Wonder how long she was in there.
And then realizing who she was, they pulled her out and wow. That's kind of mind-blowing, really.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The
memories are there, but go ahead.
I was going to say, that whole scene with Anna and Justin, is the look on her face is kind of a freaky. She did a good job in that scene of just kind of being absent while he's explaining the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like she's switched off, or or the screensaver kicked on.
Or she's watching the defragmenter on the old Windows. That's how I used to love to watch that thing, I can relate.
Very entertaining. Yep.
But no, she just has that blank stare while he's explaining the whole thing, and he has his hands on her shoulders, and she's just looking straight ahead.
She's gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stepford wife only, Stepford shadow wife. But... it looks like John's planning to fight his way out.
Now, this is where he pulls out that PPG, right?
He's been sort of reaching down and prepping it.
Right, so he had
table.
To activate it before he could use it. If it had not... Yeah, if it...
Is that what you're...
That was good, Raul.
We got another... what was that guy's name? Winslow?
Thank you.
Yeah,
From Police Academy,
Michael Winslow that did all those sound effects all the time. But if that had been activated when he walked into the place, it might have been detected and taken away.
Uh-huh. The script said so.
That's right.
Right, JP?
I thought it was a little awkward, that scene, but it just had, I don't know how else they could do it. When, you know, as they're talking to him, and they're now across the room from each other.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there on the couch. And yeah, there's a coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, well, you know.
You're talking about a guy who wore his communication link on his butt to go clear a terrorist out.
Good point.
He'll do anything. That's all there is to it.
And besides, if he didn't have it there, we wouldn't have got those little booms we were getting.
I just thought it was funny that, you know, if you put yourself in that position and your opponent is across the room standing and everybody's looking at you, which is, you know, you see clearly in the scene, and then he's sliding his hand down the side of his pant leg. And it's like, you think they don't see that?
Yeah.
But I almost wish that little bit would have just been left out and then have the point come when he just draws, you know, he stands up with a pistol, turns and fires, as opposed not trying to, oh, look, he's being so sneaky, except for there's three people staring at him when he's doing it.
But and, you know what?
Well, that's my footage is.
Or at least act like you're scratching your leg.
You know what? These people aren't all that bright because he's still wearing his link on his hand.
At least it's on his hand.
Touche.
But we get several little boom, and you get the feeling that Sheridan wasn't really all that worried about those three at all anyway. It's almost like he's been waiting for some shadows to come in from somewhere. Yeah.
Well, Morden never fought his own fight. He always had his associates with him.
No. Justin's an old man, and Anna comes up to his shoulder, maybe.
And she's got the screensaver on anyway, like we were saying.
There
so.
You go.
Right.
Combat ineffective is the...
Yep.
She's in sleep mode. But like I said, we get some little booms, and popping back to the station, Jakar thinks there might be some more big booms coming.
Some of Jakar's booms are missing. Where could they be? Where could they be?
A couple of them. What could have happened to a pair of 500 megaton nukes that are undetectable? That was one of the little points we forgot to point out. Sheridan apparently has been giving a good accounting of himself, because when we see him next, coming up over the city, he's a bit roughed up. He's been in some he's been in a bit of a fight.
But he came out on top.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Literally. Because he's on a balcony overlooking let's just say huge city, huge pit.
It's an awesome scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And two big bombs.
Mm-hmm.
It really is an awesome scene, because the Shadow City is pretty huge.
Yeah.
Conveniently, there's a sky dome right above him, though.
Well, it's for lighting and collecting energy and so forth and so on.
Right. And it gives the humans a place to go and watch over the, look over the shadows and see what a wonderful place they have. When Anna and the shadows catch up with him, and you get the feel of it, at least, as far as Anna Sheridan being gone, the way she's walking up to him, that there was just something almost disturbing. I mean, it's like she's trying to put on the sexy slink with the sachet up to him there. It's, you know, basically still on the hard sell.
Well, John's not buying it. He knows it ain't happening. Nope. So.
Yeah, I think she finally says, you know, your Anna can never come back, but hey, you got me.
Yeah, exactly.
What did she say? I can love you like she did? Was that the...
That was the gist of it, yeah.
Which really is the final nail. Absolutely no doubt, this is not Anna Sheridan. And John knows it. We get a quick pop back to Delenn, where he basically, it's like, I forgive you. I'm sorry about all that, but he's going to do what he has to do as he sees it. And in this case, that has to do... Okay, Kosh is telling him to jump.
Jump now.
Jump now. And I'm looking at that and it's like, okay, that's a long way down.
Sheridan thinks it's a long way down too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was some speculation about whether he fell through and when this happens and is he transported somewhere, and Joe never quite answered that. He just said, no, it's a really long fall, you know, a couple miles long.
Miles.
Long way to Tipperary.
And hope maybe the shadows will learn their lesson about leaving someone with the link with their communication device, because that's a lot of boom when, because he signals the white star down. And this is why we have the skylight. That was, speaking of amazing scenes, JP, the white star dashing through and crashing in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. I learned something from the commentary. Do you remember me, Raul, back a while saying that I thought that the white stars looked like plucked chickens? JMS agrees with me.
JMS says Jim is right.
Yep.
not only that, but Mac says so in season 5 in the View from the Gallery. He actually makes a comment about it.
Does he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh. We'll have to bring this one up again, Jim.
Yeah, but I had forgotten that line entirely, and then I was like, wait a minute, Jim said that.
Yeah. No, JMS says at the beginning of the episode, during the opening credits, when a white star flies by, he mentions that design never really satisfied him. He didn't really care for it. Some angles it looked really, really good, and other angles it looked like a plucked chicken.
It's one of the classiest ships in science.
Well, the creator
fiction,
doesn't agree.
Opinion,
if you think chickens are classy, you're absolutely right. Classiest chicken ever.
So we get the detonation of the nukes, and the shadows just leave.
Yeah. They just phase out.
They leave the station, but
you know, they did manage. We did get fighters launched, and Garibaldi's in one, and the shadows leave. They just fade away.
Homeworld's under attack.
Their main city is now a big smoking hole, so the shadows know.
Yeah.
But the question is, how does Susan know?
Hmm.
When the shadows leave, she basically goes almost pale, and it's like, John.
Well, she does have some telepathic abilities, as we know.
But not even a P1.
Mm.
Let's not use PsyCorp as the standard for measurement.
No, Susan has latent telepathic powers. Her and John have a connection.
Plus, I mean, she's been to Zahadum with a great machine, or at least reached out her mind before, so she might be able to sense something out there.
Still some linking to...
Yeah.
Still enough linkage to Zahadum, even if it's not John. Just having that link to Zahadum was enough to know something terrible happened there.
Yeah, it's possible.
Well, doesn't she say he's gone, or something like that?
Mm.
I'd have to go back and look again. I think she, you know, in her... While she looks pale and shocked, she says something like, he's gone.
Yeah. I think you're right.
So it's not just that something happened. I think she senses specifically what happened, at least to one person.
I think it might be. I think Troy may have it there as far as, you know, the connection to the, you know, the link, that linkage to Zahadum is sort of the, call it a psychic tunnel.
Yeah, she does say, he's gone.
Well, this brings us to, you know, the season finale monologues in the show are fantastic. And Jakar provides this one. Let's go ahead and play it, and then we'll just summarize.
Very well.
It was the end of the Earth year 2260. and the war had paused suddenly and unexpectedly. All around us, it was as if the universe were holding its breath, waiting. All of life can be broken down into moments of transition or moments of revelation. This had the feeling of both.
Commander?
Any word on the captain? Anything at all?
We've tried everything. The White Star isn't receiving. As far as we can tell, it's been destroyed. There's something else. We checked the fighter bays. One of the fighters we sent out didn't come back.
Who was the pilot?
Mr. Garibaldi.
Jaquan wrote, "There is a greater darkness than the one we fight. It is the darkness of the soul that has lost its way. The war we fight is not against powers and principalities. It is against chaos and despair. Greater than the death of flesh is the death of hope. The death of dreams. Against this peril, we can never surrender. The future is all around us, waiting in moments of transition to be born in moments of revelation. No one knows the shape of that future or where it will take us. We know only that it is always born in pain."
The universe pauses. What a way to put it.
That's interesting what you said about the monologues at the end of the episode, because the next season we'll have to remember that, because I believe it's Delenn next season, and she opens the same way as Jakar just did. It was the end of the Earth year and goes on. So I never made that connection between the two monologues like that.
And didn't Susan do, I seem to remember Susan doing it at the end of season one when she's lighting the menorah.
I think that was the opening of season two, where she explained that Sinclair had been gone for 3 days or three something.
Yeah. But the universe has paused. Delenn's grieving. Susan the same. Mike is missing. And there is one big crater. I assume it's safe to assume that Anna really is dead.
Well, you know what? Mike is missing, but we know now why the shadows left the station the way they did. They grabbed Mike and they left because they have what they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder if that was a shift in plans.
They're making good on Justin's threat to erode Sheridan's support.
Mm-hmm. I've said this before. I've said this at the end of the second season. I've said this at the end of the first season. Joe Straczynski can write one heck of a cliffhanger ending. He shows you how it should be done.
Well, and you know something, though? There's a rule that says, if you don't see a body, don't assume anything.
Mm-hmm. Referring to Anna?
Referring to John.
Referring to John? Yeah. The series, you can't say that with this show, because Straczynski doesn't seem to have much hesitation about killing people.
You know something? Anna was right there at ground zero. You know she got vaporized. She's gone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the end of that story.
Yeah, the look on her face wasn't, "I hope I survive this."
He said
a scream of terror.
Yeah. JMS said he did something like 30 takes on that before he finally got that one that he wanted?
The what?
The scream.
Oh, the scream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The scream.
Yeah. I think, man, she'd have lost her voice if that many. But she, I mean, she looked terrified.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, she would have been terrified. Dear God, am I going to have to do this again?
Good point.
So, guys, final thoughts here.
Yeah, good season.
Yeah, it was.
Great cliffhanger. Of course, we just said that.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of wish they would have continued it so he would fall into a of some sort in season 4. I mean, he's fallen in season 2, season 3. Yeah. He could have fallen down the stairs or something. And it would have been good.
Well, you know, there actually is a fall.
He falls in a way, in a manner of speaking, at the end of season 5.
He falls in season 4, but he's too important to get what he earned. I'm trying not to spoil it.
Man, I hope we get to season 4 soon.
Except you could say he's important enough that he did get what he earned.
I don't know about that. Well, anyway, that's for another time.
Mm-hmm. This is the a lot of fans consider season 3 to have been the best of the series.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can narrow it to just season 3, but season 2, 3, and first half of 4 are just some of the best television.
Well, the whole show is great. But at any rate, I'm ready to wrap this up. How about you guys?
Oh, yeah, we've been gone a very long time. Troy, we didn't get any last words from you, sir.
No, I just think that, this episode is definitely worthy of all the praise that it gets. And it's one of my favorite episodes, definitely. You know, as we go on through the series, the amount of times I've watched each episode gets less and less. And then I just found out they had a season 5 like last year. Just kidding.
You know, 5 gets maligned much worse than it deserves.
It does. And, you know, Tracy Scoggins even mentioned that to her, kind of coming in as an actress and a new person, it kind of echoed what Lockley was feeling in season 5 almost exactly. So
yeah.
That's kind of neat. But. No, this was, I would say this would be my favorite season, was season 3 as well.
Ah, well, then I do have one last question. But what is it going to take to get you back on our
show? He's like, what? He's here. He's right here.
Rather, you know, in front of the mic instead of behind the mic.
Well, it's always fun to join in and being able to talk with you real time. I don't get to do that very often. So thanks for having me for this special, on a very special Babylon podcast.
He says in a real radio voice.
Well, gentlemen, did we have any boom today?
Been waiting for this.
Big booms.
Oh, lots booms. And lots of boom.
What about tomorrow? Boom tomorrow?
Always. Take it, Troy.
There's always boom tomorrow.
Good night. Hey, JP, good night, say good night.
Good night, JP.
And Troy, you say good night.
Good night, JP.
Bravo.
Night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Podcast. Terminated. Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at the Babylon Project podcast at gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.